Have you ever felt torn between pursuing immediate pleasure and embracing lasting commitment? Soren Kierkegaard's revolutionary masterpiece, Either Or, confronts us with perhaps life's most fundamental dilemma. Should we live aesthetically, chasing novel experiences while avoiding responsibility, or ethically, finding meaning through deliberate choices and commitments? Published in 1843 under a pseudonym, this work shocked Danish society by challenging comfortable mediocrity. Through an ingenious literary device, presenting papers from two opposing perspectives, Kierkegaard doesn't merely explain philosophy, he forces us to experience the tension between these life paths. The aesthetic life promises freedom but delivers emptiness. The ethical life demands sacrifice but offers fulfillment. This nearly two-century-old text remains startlingly relevant today, influencing existentialist philosophers, psychologists studying identity formation, and even artists like David Bowie. In our age of endless options and shallow commitments, Kierkegaard's challenge feels more urgent than ever. Are you living authentically or merely drifting? Meet the unnamed aesthete, whose papers reveal a life dedicated to pleasure and avoiding boredom. All men are boring, he declares, identifying boredom as the root of all evil. His solution? Crop rotation. Not changing locations, but developing the ability to find interest in anything through attention. The more you limit yourself, the more resourceful you become. The aesthete admires Mozart's Don Giovanni for living entirely in the moment, expressing pure desire without reflection. His life foams like champagne, embodying the purest aesthetic existence. Yet beneath this sophisticated exterior lurks profound melancholy, revealed in his analysis of reflective sorrow. This approach culminates in The Seducer's Diary, where Johannes calculatedly manipulates young Cordelia. Unlike Don Giovanni, Johannes seduces for the aesthetic enjoyment of the process itself. He documents his psychological manipulation, even arranging a formal engagement for her to break off, creating the illusion of her freely choosing him. After succeeding, he coldly dismisses her. Now all resistance is impossible, and only when it is there is it beautiful to love. In The Unhappiest One, the aesthete contemplates a mysterious empty grave bearing only this inscription, a metaphor for the existential emptiness of aesthetic existence. Drawing on Hegel's unhappy consciousness, the aesthete categorizes suffering. The truly unhappy person exists in perpetual displacement, their consciousness located outside themselves, either trapped in the past, remembering, or projected into the future, hoping. The most acute unhappiness occurs when one cannot find refuge even in these temporal escapes. The most profound category includes those caught in a temporal reversal, where what he hopes for lies behind him and what he remembers lies before him. This individual lives back to front in two directions, always out of sync with time. This reveals the fundamental despair of aesthetic existence, a life unable to find fulfillment in the present moment, but constantly oscillating between past and future. The empty grave symbolizes the aesthetic life, vibrant on the surface but essentially empty, offering constant novelty without satisfaction, much like today's endless social media scrolling or dating app swiping. Judge William writes passionate letters urging the aesthete to choose the ethical life based on choice, commitment, and responsibility rather than momentary pleasure. Through these letters, he presents how ethical living deepens life's beauty through greater engagement. For the judge, marriage represents the ideal union of aesthetic and ethical spheres, demonstrating how commitment enhances rather than diminishes pleasure. Unlike the aesthete who views marriage as love's death, the judge sees it as love's fulfillment, arguing that daily choosing to love transforms fleeting passion into enduring joy. He positions duty not as love's enemy, but as its friend and confidant. The judge values practical wisdom over abstract speculation, illustrated by an anecdote about a Dutch scholar confused by what he thought was a complex diacritic mark, which his wife simply blew away as a grain of snuff, celebrating everyday understanding over intellectual pretension. For the judge, the truly extraordinary person isn't one who withdraws from universal human experience, but one who fully realizes it. This engagement with universal experiences, love, marriage, friendship, work, constitutes the highest form of self-realization. The final section introduces a third perspective beyond aesthetic and ethical, the religious. In the edifying in the thought that against God we are always in the wrong, we explore the paradoxical fulfillment found in accepting our perpetual wrongness before God. Being wrong is typically painful in human relationships, yet there's something profoundly edifying in embracing our wrongness before God. In loving relationships, we often prefer being wrong rather than seeing our beloved at fault, mirroring the distinction between finite and infinite relationships. A parent preferring to be wrong rather than seeing their child suffer glimpses this divine dynamic. This conviction stems from love and freedom, not compulsion. When we freely embrace being always in the wrong before God, we find liberation from doubt and inspiration for action. The religious perspective transcends both aesthetic and ethical by recognizing our fundamental dependence on something beyond ourselves. The religious person lives in relation to the infinite, transforming ordinary experiences into opportunities for spiritual growth through active faith rather than resignation. Kierkegaard's genius extends beyond his ideas to his presentation method. The book appears as papers discovered by Victor Eremita, victorious hermit, in a desk's secret compartment, written by two authors, A, the aesthete, and B, Judge William. This layered narrative creates a literary labyrinth reflecting life's complexity. Each pseudonym represents a distinct worldview. The aesthete writing about Mozart and desire, Judge William responding with wisdom about marriage and duty. Through this strategy, Kierkegaard presents different perspectives without endorsing any. Rather than dictating what to think, he shows various ways of thinking and compels us to choose. This indirect communication engages readers as active participants. The approach embodies Kierkegaard's belief that truth is subjective, not denying objective truth, but asserting that truth must be personally appropriated through commitment. We cannot merely learn truth as fact, we must live it through our choices. Either or thus becomes an existential challenge, making us feel the tension between different modes of existence. Kierkegaard's challenge remains profoundly relevant in our world of endless options and shallow commitments. Social media offers constant novelty. Dating apps transform relationships into carousels of possibilities, and modern career paths make long-term professional commitment seem outdated. Are we living authentically, making real choices and accepting their consequences, or merely drifting, avoiding commitment for momentary pleasure? The prevalence of fear of missing out confirms Kierkegaard's diagnosis. Each digital interaction represents a choice between commitment and avoidance, between depth and superficiality. Beyond aesthetic pleasure-seeking and ethical duty lies Kierkegaard's religious stage, a mode of being that transcends both through relationship with something greater than ourselves. This requires a leap of faith, passionate commitment that cannot be justified rationally, but must be embraced wholeheartedly. In our age of fragmentation, Kierkegaard offers a path beyond both dogmatic certainty and nihilistic despair, through the courage to choose and faith to embrace paradox. His ultimate question persists: will you choose to truly exist or merely to live?